This is Grace Cavalieri, and it is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Patty Ross is here. She's done a lot with her life. She's been a teacher, a journalist, a poet, but right now she's going to read you a poem.
This poem is called Indemnity. It is from my collection, St. Paul Street Provocations. It was a Pushcart nominated poem. It took Colin Kaepernick to take a knee for you to pay attention to me, not because my brothers were getting killed, but because it was on TV. I thought you were kidding me. A football game is worth more than a black life, given all the struggles and strife rooted in slavery and marginal lives. Right. It wasn't you, it was your ancestors that started the fight. But can't you see the need to make it right? Can't you see the boarded up houses where I lay my head? Homeless soldiers laying on the street dead. Big Mama spent decades putting pretty flowers on her stoop. She tried hard to change the neighborhood troops. And she told me it was a nice white man that she gave her life's money to. And when she died, he left all her treasures on the street for looters to go through. Now, I'm supposed to believe that he cares about me. Stop coming at me with your ifs and buts. I've had enough. Time to move loud, proud, and fearless. Truly make America great. I know the battle won't be tearless. Look at me. I'm all American. You see the color of my skin? Not African nor European, straight off the Dixie plantation. So when the brothers take a knee, it has little to do with distant wars or fake treaties, and everything to do with the way people that look like me in this country are being treated. Make America great again? Well, that's a joke. Just ask Big Mama's folk. A pickup truck came yesterday, loaded up all that was left of her stay, threw it in the back like trash on garbage day. So I crossed the street and I took a knee and I prayed for Big Mama and for you and for me. And when I raised my head from asking for peace, I saw Big Mama's picture laying face up on the street. Now that nice white man told me get off his stoop as he put the for rent sign over my head. So I stood there for a minute wondering, do you think he gives a damn that Big Mama is dead?
Patty Ross, what book is that from?
That is from my collection, St. Paul Street Provocations. It was published by Yellow Arrow Publishing out of Baltimore.
And it is a kind of a compilation of life in Baltimore. Is mm-hmm. really an homage to living in Baltimore.
Yes.
As Patty Ross.
Yes, I lived on St. Paul Street on the corner of St. Paul Street and Lafayette, one block south of North Avenue. The cover art is actually a mural that was done by Jesse Underthaler and Katie Troon, who were part of the Open Walls program for the city of Baltimore. And they painted this mural on the park ground in front of the building I lived in. It's called Walk the Line. And the beautiful thing was when I wrote this, because I did several of the poems in here, I did while watching them do that work. When I reached out to them to say, hey, listen, I wanted to put the mural on the cover. They said, yes, please go ahead and do it. And of course, the publisher was like, you know, it's going to cost money and what are the fees and this, that, and the other. And Jesse and Katie said, no, please use the work.
Really perfect for that Thank book. You. It demonstrates what the book is about. Couldn't be better. And the Pushcart Prize is a national award for the best poem in a literary magazine. And the poem we just heard was the candidate for that. Okay, so what is poetry? What is activism? And what is a poetry activist, Patty?
For me, poetry activism is telling the truth of our history. I think that so much of African American Black history was hidden, not shared, both by both sides, right? So many of our ancestors did not want to speak of what they had gone through in history. And so consequently, I feel like that at this stage of the game, I can be a voice for those that were voiceless. I also am a strong advocate of the Poor People's Campaign. And so I want people to understand that, you know, poverty is not a choice. It's not something that people do at birth and say, hey, you know, I'd like to be homeless. You know, that'd be cool. No, I think that we have to get away from this idea that a lot of things are individual choices and begin to look at some of the societal constructs that have been put in place, and some of the societal, you know, sort of systemic issues that continue to exist that cause people to be in situations in which they have perhaps little control, we'll say.
Yes, yes. And the fact that you use poetry or as an art to galvanize and gather and speak, I think, is why you're here today, because that's what I find is so significant about your life. But primary to us today is your poetry. So let us have two and just get a good sense of Patty Ross. And I'll tell them that you graduated from Duke Ellington School for the Arts, that you also have a certificate in writing for social justice from the University of California, Berkeley. So you've had journalistic pieces that have gained publication, and you have you are the author of three books, I believe. You also have set up art exhibits and have gathered poets together for a book of ekphrastic art. And you have been dedicating your life to using poetry as a propulsion for your ideas. And now give us two together. Patty Ross.
So this poem is from the book, Writing the Land, and that is The Foodways and Social Justice. This book is not published by me. It's published through, edited by Dr. Liz McLaughlin, and it's published through Nature Culture, which is a group that looks at all of the different conservancies and land trusts within the country. And so myself and, of course, your other good friend, Laura Chavon, did some work on the farm that's here called Freetown Farm, which is here in Howard County. It was originally a enslaved plantation. So, and then it was, lands were dedicated to free slaves post emancipation. And so, and if you come to Columbia, you will go down Harriet Tubman Drive, Freetown Drive, and those areas, and there are still descendants that live there now, from many, many years ago. And just recently, they opened up the old Harriet Tubman School, which was the school, the segregated school for the colored. So,
whoa.
Yeah. So Freetown Farm Gardens, and this is a sestina. There are gardens here, weaved in between a road of pebbles. We were walking, Angela and I, heading toward the forest, finding a wood stage surrounded by log seats, children at play. The lush green of the trees drawing us closer, we almost missed her, an Isabella tiger moth or banded woolly bear, no bigger than our thumb, creeping along mulch chips heading toward the mushroom garden. There are six gardens for eating and few others for healing. All are gardens. There is much to see and do here at this free farm, a rain garden of pebbles. Wildflowers fill the space with yellow and pink petals the size of my thumb. Kara told us a black bear was once among the black cherry trees of the forest. I would have been scared if I saw a bear, but not her. My friend Angela is fearless. Nothing bothers her and ends her play. The homeschool kids have arrived, and what is learning looks like play. I remember I used to make mud pies, pretending to sell them at a market garden. We both went to school in Philadelphia, but I am not as courageous as her. Near the medicinal herbal spiral, I saw the ricinus plant, still walking the pebbles, leaves with what seemed streaked blood overshadowed the circumstantial forest, moving toward the plant. I held the big leaf between my fingers and my right thumb. Wetlands behind the spirals of cattails, thick and thin as my thumb, are singing in this purposeful pond, propagating as play. I never thought I would see much on this 6.4-acre farm and forest. Wetlands and their creeping roots sit next to the NAACP garden, where roots conjure up slaves moving quietly among the berm's pebbles. I think back to the woolly bear and wondering how many of her have survived the running feet of children overlooking her while dancing to the children's garden to measure peppers thumb-sized and watched farm chickens peck among the pebbles for crumbs left from lunchbox sandwiches lost at play. Screams and whispers tune my ears to the grow it, eat it garden, remembering when I first became an explorer in the red clay Carolina forest. All this history, all this learning curved out of this small forest. Looking at the big old oak, I asked, did you see her? Harriet, you know, all those times she passed the land of gardens, did she stop to rest here and lean against you, leaving her thumbprint? Did those following her ask to rest in the lush, giving worry away to play, to drink from the river Patuxent, calming heartbeats among the pebbles? At noon, the sun reflects off the forest river and paints glitter on its pebbles. They sparkle like squeals of homeschool kids out of the garden and off to play. Isabella. What a pretty name for a caterpillar, no bigger than my thumb.
Calming heartbeats among the pebbles.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear another.
Castor oil's apparition. Walking this farm path, I hear a whisper, or was it more a soft call? Strong to my hearing, a graceful ghost song. Shifting toward garden plot, where plants and herbs dwell between the forget-me-nots, daydreaming of grandfather, walking his farm, my hand in his hand, callous and soft. I hear her, the Ricinus communis, standing tall at the back of the garden box. We had met before, but not on this farm's pathway. A different pathway down south where old folk and tribal talked of your sacred purpose. Now understanding my quiver on this Freetown farm parcel. Empath to the tale of African queens and African kings who walked this land using the crown of hair, bearing a seed for birthing in a new land on bended knees. The castor bean. Calming body's pain used in the labor of bringing about new life, new generations, hands praying of luminous parables filling new days of hope, then evoking its origin, East Africa. Sitting on the beach in Tanzania or the market in Uganda, combing windblown hair.
Ah, nice. You began as a performer and as a graduate of the Duke Ellington School for the Arts. What is the thing that you took away from that? What is that kind of education? How did it frame you? If you could say just one thing you remember that why you are the way you are because of the Duke Ellington School for the Arts, what would be your answer? Confidence?
No, I think Duke Ellington taught us learn to speak and speak out loud.
So it was communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was learning to speak about issues and speak out loud, or learning to perform, learning to show community what issues were going on. When I was in school, we actually had a protest. We protested. There was some art that was done in our visual art department and it included all of the parts of the human body. So it was anatomically correct. And the community, some of the school community, some of in the school system did not want that artwork to be shown. And we placed those visual art statues on our front lawn, and we all went out and protested to ensure that the work was shown.
So Duke Ellington taught you more than content.
Yes.
It did teach you to stand up and be seen.
Yes.
To be proud and to be courageous.
Yes. Which,
and they use the arts then as the rubric for that. Nothing. So are you pleased that you went there instead of a regular high school?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to Duke Ellington. I was actually a dance major there. But, you know, we studied all of the arts. So we were well-rounded as artists once we came out. And then I went on to the Philadelphia College of Performing Arts for a year of study there, sort of furthering, you know, my understanding of dance and music. I would say that I was thrilled to go to Duke Ellington. Duke Ellington has a strong artist community, even now, as we've all sort of aged, but we're still kind of, you know, involved. Everybody's still involved in the arts, and we still, reach out to each other and, right. and collaborate. And everything.
How, what is the bridge from physicality to a more intellectual use of language where you moved into poetry?
So I've always loved poetry. Poetry was something I've done even as a young child. I actually started out as an elegist, I sort of say, because every time somebody died in my family, I would write a poem. And then it started to get to be this thing of, you know, so-and-so died. Are you going to write a poem? Are you going to write a poem? You know, it was like, okay. So it kind of started from there. But I think a lot of it also started from, you know, as a child, having been born in the 60s and, you know, came through the 60s and the 70s and having parents that had come out of, you know, directly come out of the civil rights era. I think a lot of reading was done and a lot of the poets were a part of that. You know, you had Baldwin, you had, you know, even Maya Angelou, you had, you know, obviously, you know, Hughes, you had, you know, before then, folks were still talking about Zora Neale Hurston, you know, so you had a lot of people that came out of that time period.
It was a good time to be born.
And so my parents had those conversations and I was sort of, you know, at knee listening to a lot of that.
So the 60s were burgeoning where the 50s had been so repressive. The 60s gave so much permission for us to voice ourselves. And you apparently are a product of that. A wonderful.
Yeah, point. I was listening. You know, I was at the March on Washington in 63 with my mom. I was just a baby, you know, in the carriage. It sort of started from there. And also, My grandparents were part of the university culture. And so, you know, study and reading and writing and stuff like that was
okay.
always.
Okay, let's hear a little bit of your reading and writing and poetry. Mm-hmm. Let's hear a poem.
Patty Ross. This poem is out of the collection done through Poetry is Life, which is a collection by Yellow Arrow Poetry. Yellow Arrow Publishing, I'm sorry, and this is called Suits. I do like the buttons with their tiger eye petition. They add a point of superiority. The wide lapel at first seems vast, yet it gives merit to the look. I like the army green one best. The beige one has the characteristic of stylish. Father, you make those leisure suits look elegant. I often wondered where you bought them, Franco's in downtown Richmond. Had I seen one in the front window display, or was it a gentleman's store up north, bought while you were doing business for freedom? I loved the few times you let me tag along, my eyes watching you move the fabric between your fingers, ensuring its quality. I remember once you asked about the stitching, whether hand or machine done, then reminding me to look at the details and how life is the same as a good suit. The details tell the story. When grandmother and I would walk past the downtown stores, I imagined that you were inside You were trying on the latest style or color. You were there asking the clerk about the make and the design. You were near. Once, while we were waiting there on the bubblegum sprayed sidewalk, I dreamed you were coming to pick us up in your new baby blue Ford Thunderbird. I was hungry and we would lunch downtown. On the bus ride back home, for the first time, I noticed the torn seams in the seats and the coldness of the fabric. I tried to feel the quality of it, but there was a numbness instead. I started to wonder what details tell my story and if I will ever wear an army green suit.
Life is the same as a good suit. There's a metaphor. Do you teach poetry?
I don't teach poetry, but I have a collective, EC Poetry and Prose, which is a collective of poets, and we are starting to offer workshops. I host an open mic and a kind of, along with a sort of a workshop over at the Baltimore County Arts Guild. We have open mic every third Thursday over there each month. And then, I started the first Fridays for the Maryland Writers Association. So that's how got into doing the open mic.
You were very active with that association. I know. And we're going to hear another poem, and then we're going to hear about why you started a small press.
Okay. I always like to share the well. So I always like to do some of the different poems that I've done. This is most recent poem is called Colored School. And this was done for the 250th anniversary of the Ellicott City. And this was done in this collection through Hoco Palitzo, Howard County Poetry and Literary Society. It's called Colored School, and it's an acrostic poem. So each letter in the word colored schools will have a line of poetry with it. So you have to listen to each one to get the spelling of a colored school. Close to the river's union, seen out the gap, an 1880 graveyard fence, leans against a cabin on the hill where the Tiber bends. Voices release from muted mouths, tears fill eyes of former slaves. The law, designated colored school. Charmed dreams, hopes watered for 73 years. One room overgrown of what is to be learned.
Fabulous. It says so much and it is so compressed. So fine. Yes. You promised that you would mention your publishing house, which is, I think, just a couple of years old.
Yeah, we just actually started the publishing house, which is Fallen Tree Press. Terry Simon and I kind of got together. We're sort of partners in crime because when I started doing the open mic, even before Maryland Writers down at Siriana's in Old Ellicott City, Terry kept saying, you know, we should probably do something. And she wanted to do a press. We went to a bookbinding class and really got the bug after that. And so we decided that we would open up a press for poetry only. And so we published two publications a year. We are so blessed to have received so many wonderful submissions. And so our first publication was actually the Ephrastic publication, which is this one, Portraits of Life, which I think you have this one.
It is very beautiful.
Yeah, it was really great because we were able to really capture some wonderful photos in there, or wonderful paintings in there. And that was paintings by Elaine Wiener Reed and April Rimpo. It came out of an idea that in 2019, they did a show over in Columbia and had invited poets to come in and write to their paintings.
I remember.
And that's where we got the Ephrastic. That was sort of my first foray into Ephrastic poetry, and I loved it. You know, I had seen others, other stuff done throughout the years, but I really enjoyed doing it myself. So that was where we got started. And then
tell us how you invited the poets. Did you take the ones that were hung with the exhibit? Did you invite the poets to respond to a painting, or did you take the gallery's offerings?
So when we did our show, which was in November 2021, we invited April and Elaine to come out and put together an exhibit. And then just seeing the exhibit, I invited a lot of poetry friends to say, hey, can you come out and take a look at some of these paintings and see if anything moves you? And many of them did, and they were moved. And so we were able to put together a collection of 13, but we had several others that contributed as well. And we were able to publish that book. We had to, because we had an evening of poetry reading, and the reading evening was so wonderful, Grace. The audience just really loved it, that I was holding all of the poems sort of in my hand, you know, just, and I said, this is a book.
Oh, we that must is so great. This. It is yeah. so great. I love it when people take charge of the world and they say, we don't have to wait to be published. We will be the publishers. Yeah. And let's hear another poem by Patty Ross before we go into your many dimensions.
All righty.
Another poem.
Okay.
Do you want to read one of the ekphrastic ones?
Sure, if you'd like me to.
I think they stand alone. They do stand alone.
This poem, I'll read my poem Focused, which is dedicated to Lucille Clifton and her poems, Homage to My Hips and Won't You Celebrate With Me. This is, I don't know if you can see the painting, but April Rippo did this. Elaine Wiener Reed did this painting with the woman in her hips. And the bag is on it. I sling my purse across my body. It rests in the middle of my hips. Hips that walk from darkness. Hips that close doors. Hips that laugh at insults. Spit them on the floor. Laden with dirt from past existence. I celebrate my hips, thankful they guide me, thankful absent from death, thankful for the light of yellow, green, tangerine, thankful, mixed up, we rose above the blue.
Patty, that is wonderful. Hips that walk from darkness, indeed, they do with you, into the light, into the light. Well, finally, I know that you're very active in hunger, in helping to reduce hunger. What is Hunger X and how are you involved?
So Poetry X Hunger is an online community that Hiram LaRue had put together as a way to address hunger and food insecurity, and use poetry through instruction. So teachers can go to this site and pull down multiple poems and use them as a way to talk to students about hunger and about food insecurity. Through that work, I am the poet in residence for the Anne Arundel County Food Bank.
What does that mean?
First poet in residence they have. So what that means is that as they have different events and different things, they have incorporated poetry into that work. So last year, when they had their annual fundraiser, they had me write a poem for that.
Oh, okay.
And present that to
them.
Well,
we'd love to hear that. We'd love to hear that.
Okay. So, and then, you know, through their newsletters and other ways that they do things online and stuff like that, they've incorporated poetry into it. So it's a pretty new thing, you know, and I think that Hiram is the impetus for all of that. You know, he's starting that, which is just wonderful. So
awesome.
It was nice to have been chosen. I think there was a number of poets that they could choose from, and they chose me for some reason.
Patty, I think I know the reason. Also, the fact that you wrote an occasional poem is significant, because an occasional poem is really hard to write with true feelings when you're given a topic. Let us hear that poem.
Okay. And this poem comes out of their fiscal report. that they did. Hope bringing food to the table. The net hangs low, the under-resourced forced into insecurity. Hope bringing food to the table. The blessing of food during difficult times reminds us the 5,600 households ballooning to 34,000 households waiting to hold healthy food, freely given like coins in the offering plate. We must be bold. No more business as usual. This net must hold more. We must be bold. This net must hold more. The bounty must feed our brothers, our sisters, our neighbors. Hope bringing food to the table. We give thanks for the food parceled on the cold metal tables, overseen with care from volunteers. Staff working with dedication and ingenuity, parsing together remnants of subsidies and food drives. We give thanks for these hands that carefully secure the net, holding benefactors, partners, the dumbstruck, standing together to end the anxiety of a groaning stomach. Hope brings food to the table. We give thanks.
Hope bringing food to the table. Now Patty Ross will read a final poem.
So this final poem is from my book, and since we're in Black History Month, I will read this. And so many of my friends, when they see this, they'll go, because they know I always do this poem. One of my pet peeves is Black History Month and the fact that it is only 1 month long, 28 days, the shortest month of the year and the coldest, I believe. And actually on Saturday, I will be at Bird in Hand along with several other poets, and we will be talking about Black history from the framing of what's been going on in Florida and the AP African American study, along with critical race theory. So we'll be discussing that and reading some of our poems and poetry. And you know some of these other poets. Cliff Ranier will be there with his beautiful harmonica. Zarina Frey and Carrie Martindale. So we'll all be there reading our poems and having this discussion.
Good for you. Good for you.
So History Month. History Month also came out of kind of like when we're sitting on the back porch with my cousins and we're talking. So this is sort of, you know, it's got a little bit of slang in it. And so, you know, we're sitting there talking. Why my history got to be only 1 month long? Didn't we suck from the same breast, sing the same songs? We was both in that wash bucket, your dirt and mine intertwined. Said we was brothers, till Massa say no. I'm in the fields trying to forget that you lays your head in my mama's lap. Why my history got to be only 1 month long? Isn't there a lot to tell from the 400 years riding the prairie alongside you? Christmas took the first bullet for our flag, so you leave me confused. How can I not be patriotic? That's the thinking of those psychotic. My ancestors' bones are the sand you sink your feet in at the beach, gazing across the water at their last loving memory. 1 month of history, their story is too long and too strong for that. Why my history got to be only 1 month long? Even though we pray to the same God, how did he give you privilege and turn his back on me? Was it when you made me black and hang from the poplar tree? Or was it the week you burned down Tulsa, making Black Wall Street subprime? Or was it the day we started school, your old books, now mine? Or was it the day they closed the library because I was in line? Why my history got to be only 1 month long? You plan to shoot me in the back 16 times or leave me out of the game to die on the sidelines? 28 days is not enough time to explain the pain of living invisible and being called out your name. 28 days is not enough time to explain why your mammy and my mama got the same man. It's too short of time to explain that this land is my land built by Black and brown hands. Why my history got to be only 1 month long? Is it because when the cage bird sings her song, the shouts from Louisiana's Angola ring so strong? Or is it because, if the truth be told, you owe me for trying to steal my people's souls? Mm-hmm. Why my history got to be only 1 month long?
Oh, that is wonderful. The voice of Patty Ross. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. This series is produced by Forest Woods Media. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Synipic Fund, by Natalie Canivore and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.